Good morning, and welcome to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I am joined, as always, by my fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Marianne. How are you?
I guess I'm fine. I seem to have a Monday morning brain.
No, like me too.
Going on.
I'm like, it's foggy out. Yeah. Oh, wait, not out.
No, in. I can hardly see in here. I need to have my husband replace the light bulb. That's what I always do at home.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so perfect.
When a light bulb burns out, I don't replace it. I just go, there's a light burned out in the kitchen, and then it magically gets fixed.
I've had a light out for a couple days. A couple days ago, I made chocolate chip cookies, you know?
Ooh.
And I really like, you know, there's like this trend in cookies lately where they're just gigantic.
I know.
And so showy and goopy. And that just doesn't appeal to me. I don't want to have a 1,500 calorie cookie,
yeah,
you know?
Right. Lunch or a cookie.
I know. Or like your whole day's food or a cookie. It's really something. I mean, they're getting to be upwards of half a pound.
Ooh.
And I don't want that. I like thin. I like crispy cookies. I like that. That's just what I like. So there's a chocolate chip cookie that I make that is thin and crispy, and I really like it. So I made them, and then, oh, fog. I completely forgot that there's that butter now that's different than old butter.
Right.
And I just can't make those cookies. And so I'd given up trying to figure out how to make them. A bunch of the cookies that I normally make, I'd figured out how to work around the new butter that has a lot more liquid, a lot more water, milk in it, and then fat than the old butter. And so I made them, and I'm just like, dough! I just completely forgot that I couldn't make them anymore. So
yeah, but are they edible though? They're still good.
Oh yeah, but they're just not delicious.
Yeah,
you know, they're
phooey.
Just cookies.
Maybe you just need to spread a little butter on them. Warm them up first; it'll melt. Be fabulous. That'd be fabulous.
It's like buttering your cheese. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna butter my cookie.
I do under certain circumstances like buttered cheese. So,
what?
Yeah.
When?
On you know, the traditional cheese and pickle sandwich that's very British.
Okay.
And it's, well, I don't know what kind of bread it is, but for me it would be brown bread with butter on one side.
Okay.
And really sharp cheddar and pickles of your choice.
Okay.
I like bread and butter pickles in that, but it could be any kind of pickle you like. Anyway, cheese and pickle. And it has to have a little butter.
Okay.
Because if nothing else, well, the good butter adds a very fine flavor to whatever you use it in, but also it stops a slightly moist pickle from soaking into the bread.
Yes. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think I just say that because it seems like the most unhealthy thing you could eat
if
you like butter your cheese.
It is. As it turns out, that category is across the board delicious, the most unhealthy. Totally delicious.
Speaking of little sandwiches like that, English sandwiches, I've really been just thinking about English tea lately, you know?
Ooh.
Just I know it's not right to call it high tea. I don't know if it's afternoon tea, but just where they bring that three-tiered thing of, I think it's sandwiches, savory things, and then scones, and then sweets. And I just think that that's so pretty. I had an auntie that would take me to tea when I was a kid, you know, and it was just so fun, you know, clotted cream and jam on your scones.
Oh my God, it's perfect.
Well, remember there was that place downtown Astoria 20 years ago that used to do that?
Yes.
And I think
was it the Danish place?
No, I don't think so. I think it was separate. I think, did it have the word Victorian in its name?
Oh, maybe.
No, I might be wrong. But
I can't remember the details of it, but yes, I miss having, and I know that our fabulous historical Flavelle Mansion does a tea, but it's not the high tea where you get they have tea and scones.
Okay.
But it's still fun and delicious.
Yeah.
And it's about the only, I shouldn't say it's the only time I drink tea, but I'm mostly a coffee drinker.
Yeah.
But if I have opportunity to have a real British tea, I will take it for sure with all the goodies.
Well, I'm also a coffee drinker, but I do think tea is delicious. And I've been experimenting with making cakes that are flavored with different teas.
Uh-huh.
There's so many flavored teas.
Yes.
I mean, just so many. And it turns out that they lend themselves well to baked goods. So just whatever your liquid is that you're making your cake with, you just have to be, you know, like plan ahead and just steep it in tea. And that's been really interesting. I have on my book in the works to also try to flavor a frosting with tea, but I'm not too sure how I'm going to do that if I have to melt butter and then, you know, make it cold again. But it's never the same when you do that. It's grainy. Yeah. And I don't know if that'll work, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how it would work, and I don't know. If you don't know, I definitely don't know.
Well, and I could pulverize, I mean, to an absolute powder tea,
yeah,
and add it that way, but I just don't know if that also would just be a little too much. I don't know. But I'm going to try. I think there's room there.
We'll stay tuned.
And there's a lot of frostings where you add just a couple tablespoons of, like, heavy cream.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I could get enough flavor in a couple tablespoons.
Yeah. That's the problem with, I mean, you can't... You can steep it past the point that it's palatable. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then it just turns really bitter if you leave it too long. But I anxiously await the results of your experiments. We all do.
She's my primary test monkey. No, that's not true. Dale is. She's my secondary test monkey. Poor Dale.
lucky Dale. Are you kidding?
No, because you just get the good. He gets the good, the mediocre, and the bad. There's a thing with beets and anchovies like 15 years ago that he still hasn't lived down.
The memory lingers
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Often with anchovies, it does, but in a very good way, I think. Oh, my gosh. What have you been cooking?
You know, it's summer, and it's not blazing hot here, which is nice and refreshing, but just so many salads. It's just, that's... It's what feels good to eat this
yes,
time of year.
Yes.
And I made a dressing that I really liked. It was that Justine Guérin.
Guérin. It's not that difficult.
I just wish, I've never heard her ever say her own name, and I just wish she would, you know.
You can go on the interwebs and hear it.
No, but I've never heard her say it, ever.
But you will be, all right. Well, it's not an uncommon name in France, and
okay.
you can hear a pronunciation of it, and it's just Guérin.
Guérin, okay. Well, anyway, she made a pear vinaigrette. I really like pears
Ooh,
a lot.
Yeah, me too.
I love pears. And I remember back in the, it's probably the 80s, there was a drink that was going around. It was a French pear water. Just
oh.
And it was delicious, and I've never found anything like it since. It was sort of like when Orangina was a big deal, and oh, it was just delicious. Anyway, this is a pear vinaigrette, and here's her method. Excuse me. She says to grate half a pear, but I grated a whole pear because at the end it didn't seem like enough. So I grated a pear, and then she says it's all about the grating. And even though, like, I made that... you know, decision that I wasn't going to follow recipes exactly right,
yeah.
even for the first time if I didn't have everything, so I would try more things. This one I did exactly what she said. So I grated this stuff, even though I so badly just wanted to put it in a food processor and just blitz the bejesus out of it. But so I grated actually a whole pear.
What did you use for a grater? I mean, what kind of grater?
The only thing that I had that I thought was small enough, which was like a microplane type thing,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the only thing I had that I thought was small enough. Otherwise, it would have been like, you know, a cheese box, and that just wasn't right.
Right, okay.
So, because I don't have the box, I have the, like, slab on a stick.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's called. But anyway, two cloves of garlic, a pear, and half a shallot. And the shallot was delicious grated. I mean, it all just turns to mush. It's not identifiable at all.
Uh-huh.
But and that's why I think that it would be probably okay to stick it in a blender or a food processor. Half a shallot. There's a little bit of nutmeg, a quarter teaspoon, but I grated that. And then 3 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar. And then 3 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil, but I ended up using more than that.
Yeah, I would too.
And salt and pepper, and it was just really good. I did end up adding just a little squirt of honey, but
uh-huh.
But I really liked it. And so I think it was you years ago that taught me to put jam in vinaigrettes, but the pear is delicious.
And did you just use it on a green salad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So her salad had radicchio and red leaf lettuce, but I just had a box of half spinach and half greens, and I used that. And then she slices up pears, toasted pecans, and parmesan, and then she grates the parmesan across the top, and She puts pecans in there, but then she also grates pecans over the top. And that was good. I don't know if I'd do the work to do that again, but still, I never thought to, you know, grate a pecan over the top of a salad. And it was just something new. And with the Parmesan cheese, it was good.
I bet. Yeah, that's a good combination, I think, for a lot of things, that topping.
Yeah, yeah. And so anytime I can find something with pears, I'm not necessarily thrilled to death about cooked pears. For me, they just don't have that same just delicious flavor. But anything with a fresh pear, I'm up for. And so.
I love pears. And you can get a variety, at least one variety of pear year round. They change depending on the season, but they're kind of like apples. There's a peak season, but there's also a anytime you want a pear.
Yeah.
Pear.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. And I do use it if I want some applesauce for a particular thing for dinner,
mm-hmm.
and I have one apple and one pear, I will stick them both in the pot and make a pear applesauce. I like them cooked that way.
Yeah.
I've never had pear butter. Have you?
Yes. And also pear jam.
Oh.
And they're both good.
Wow.
There's a woman out in Brownsmead who makes she calls it ugly pear jam because the pears are ugly. They come from a tree that was there when she bought a property.
Oh, they're probably fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. And so she makes a really good ugly pear jam.
It's hard not to prefer a fruit that has put all its energy into tasting good and none of its energy into that, you know,
yes, yes.
That you know, vain thing about looking perfect
beauty,
all the time.
Beauty.
Yeah. Oh, ugly pear is my favorite.
I can really, you can call me that from now on.
I wonder about, you know, we have talked about berries until really we can't, until they're practically out of season. We've talked about them so long, except blackberries.
Yeah.
Coming on.
Yeah. And blackberries are so interesting because each one tastes different than the other. It's not like it's more intensely strawberry than the last strawberry. It's just that they taste so different from each other. It's really, really great.
And that you can, you know, pull over on the side of almost any road and just pick a bunch of blackberries.
Well, and then because I've been putting jam in vinaigrettes for so long, this pear thing just made me realize I can put fresh fruit in any vinaigrette, and I'm excited to try that with blackberries and raspberries and things like that.
And peaches stone fruit.
Peaches.
Before started, I was like, plums. I've had good plums lately.
It's so funny. It's like the best segue that was ever said on the face of the earth. We were talking before the show, and we said something about something plummeting, and Marianne's, speaking of plums.
I am enjoying plums and pluots, and I haven't dipped into apricots yet because I love apricots so much, and it's so easy to get a not that great apricot because they're not, nobody around here has an apricot tree. It's not like that. So I might have to actually venture to the Sunday market, which here in Astoria, the Sunday market, there's fabulous farmers markets going on everywhere. I don't care where you are when you're listening to this. There is a farmers market in your world that's worth driving to, seriously. And for our neck of the woods, the really great chili peppers and peaches and corn are all coming to us from not that far away, but not the neighborhood. Like, we can't wait. We can't expect our local farmers to be growing fields of corn for us.
Yes, yes. Fending off the sea lions.
So it's a high time if, like me, you haven't ventured to a farmer's market yet because I'm lazy and I haven't had to. There's been stands close by.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's time to go to the farmer's market and get all that great stuff that's coming on right now. Tomatoes.
Do you think that peach would be good in a vinaigrette?
I don't know why
I
not.
I don't know.
When you talk about grating something.
Yeah, from now on, I'm just putting it in the blender or in the.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just doing that instead.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fine. But I'm thinking about, you know, when you grate a tomato, a good tomato, mm-hmm. to do the Spanish tomato on bread.
thing.
Pan con tomate. Pan con tomate. It is so delicious, and it is so super evocative of tomato-y when you do that, that I don't know why you couldn't do that and toss it into a vinaigrette.
Okay, so maybe grating is key. Maybe it's something that...
Maybe.
That if you whiz it all up, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
Because there are like little teeny tiny pieces of whole tomato in there that you would taste, you know?
Yeah. Be good. Yeah. I think now, especially when you can get a good tomato, not just a red tomato, a good tomato.
Yeah.
Quickly, a reminder that Food Talk is a co-production of KMUN Community Radio and North Coast Food Web. And must I tell you for the millionth time, KMUN.org, NorthCoastFoodWeb.org, excellent, excellent, action-packed websites. Go there and be amazed. So, I asked you what you've been cooking, and I don't know if I got us off track somehow. I don't know where I went with that.
Well, I never have a lot of success with gluten-free pasta or whole wheat pasta, and I didn't know why. And so I kind of wanted to figure out what my problem was. And so I think part of it is that I feel, and I don't know if it's true, but that with both of those, gluten-free and whole wheat pasta, you have to be way more careful about when it's done. And I think maybe it's just that with regular wheat pasta, I've just cooked it for so many years that I just know, oh, that one takes 11 minutes. You know what I mean? I think I just know. And so I did two things. One, I salted the water heavier than I normally do. But it's not like it's going to kill you. You know, you pour out all that salt with water.
Right.
And then I really, really paid attention to when the pasta was done, like not just taking it out like every 30, 45 seconds and trying it. And then the last thing I did, and I think that this was really key, is just that the pasta, both gluten-free and whole wheat, sometimes are just a little bland. And so I shocked them to stop them because I was making it summer pasta salad. I shocked them in cold water. I didn't use ice water. I used cold water, which was just fine, but that was salted. And I used cold water because I could get the salt to dissolve. And so I think shocking them in the cold water just kept the salt on the cold water that was salted, kept the salt on the pasta. And that's what it needed. It just needed a little salt, and then it didn't, you know, suck. So I think I think
hooray. Yeah. That's what we always hope when we cook dinner.
So I think, and I have no idea if this is true at all, but I think maybe there's something about wheat pasta where it just holds on to some of the salt, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then, but the other two, the whole wheat and the gluten-free, I think maybe it's just easy to wash it all off and then you just get paste.
Pasta. I'm fascinated that you say that. The whole wheat and the gluten-free don't have any flavor compared to wheat pasta, which I think has no flavor.
Okay. Well, and I think, but I really think it was the salt. I think it was, when I say flavor, I think it was just the little salt that makes it a lot more palatable to me. Yeah. And so I think that's what it was, that the regular wheat pasta just hangs on to it better.
I think also it makes me realize, we may have talked about that in the distant past, but I've had a question in the past about why we put the salt in the pasta water just before we put the pasta in, as opposed to salting the water and bringing it to a boil.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that that pasta needs to get a little bit cooked before we... You know what I mean?
Like, oh, that's interesting, because
to absorb the salt.
Okay.
I don't know.
Because the most successful experimental run I had was I forgot to put salt in the pasta water, and I'm like, oh, and it had like 2 minutes to go, and I dumped a bunch of salt in there, and then that was the most successful one.
Oh, so you know, it may
you
be...
might. I think that you might have hit the nail on the head there.
I don't know. That would have been a fluke. Totally a fluke.
Speaking of plums.
Yeah, exactly. I had, this is how a typical dinner goes for me. At about 6 o'clock, I go, oh, I wonder what I'm cooking. And then I look up a recipe because I don't have anything in my brain about it. Or I know I have something in the fridge that I need to use. And mm-hmm. so I look up a recipe and realize that it sounds really good. And then go out and start cooking it and realize I don't have like 50% of the ingredients.
Yes, yes.
And then I have to just wing it. And sometimes that turns out really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you can look around at what you have and know exactly what it will taste like if you mix it together. And that's what happened to me with some shrimp the other night. I have no idea. I am not a recipe tester. Do I ever write anything down? No. So I can't duplicate it ever.
Bummer.
It's just a, you know, wonderful thing, and then it's gone, like blowing soap bubbles. They're lovely, and then they're gone. But it was just I made a extemporaneous shrimp marinade, like prawn marinade, and just tossed them in a bowl while I was getting other things together, and they turned out really well. I think that gochujang is probably one of the miracles of the seasoning world.
It is delicious.
It is so delicious. And it can be, you know, it can hurt you, or it can be just way in the background and you wonder what it is that's making this taste so delicious.
Yeah, you can't use, you know, a serving spoon when you're globbing it out.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll
like
die.
Like I do with chili crisp. I could eat that stuff by the spoonful. Yeah. Anyway, I was just thinking that There's so many different approaches to cooking, and I think that you are at one end of the spectrum where you are a recipe tester and you take notes and you come up with something that you can replicate.
Yeah.
And then there's me going, we need dinner in 15 minutes and I have no idea what I have. And then I stand there in front of the open refrigerator for 10 minutes until the alarm goes off, the door alarm goes off, and pull a bunch of stuff out and hope that it's going to work. Yeah. So I don't know.
I don't know. It seems to work.
Well, I mean, you know, our husbands get fed. That's what I can say. Yeah. I can say that.
I recently bought some silicone freezing molds.
They
come in like, you know, 2 cup, 1 cup, 1/2 cup. And then rather than just hoping that Dale will eat the leftovers, I've just been freezing them. And so that's been kind of a nice thing, just being able to pull something out and thaw it and microwave it and put it in front of him and say, here.
Yeah.
But I am, I think, much more than you and most normal people, all about, you know, getting stuff in the freezer.
Yeah.
But then I don't know if that gets away, if that takes away frustration when you just can't figure out what to have.
Well, certainly it does. And I realize that periodically.
Yeah.
That would be helpful, but I don't know.
But having those molds, those silicone molds, because it's so easy, because they're so pliable, to get something out of it. You know, you don't have to secretly run water and hope not to get it wet or anything like that. It just, and they're
out,
square, so they fit in the freezer really, really well. You can put them in bags.
You can stack them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not like putting half a cup into a deli container and then the other half, you know, cup and a half isn't got anything in it and it's wasted freezer space.
Yeah.
So.
Have you ever, on a totally different note?
Yeah. Speaking of plums.
let me take a sharp left. Have you ever microwaved corn on the cob still in the husks and silks?
No, because there was this guy whose name was the Corn King where I grew up, and he just loved corn so much. And what he did is he would husk it, and then he would wrap it in plastic wrap and microwave ear at a time, 2 minutes, and then you just cut the plastic wrap off, and it was absolutely perfect.
Really?
And so, but then I remember, like, I think it was last show or the show before, you were talking about microwaving it in the husk, and I think it's worth trying because you wouldn't use plastic, you know?
Yeah, and also it is so much easier to slide it out of its silk. You know how you're constantly, like, I will husk fresh corn and then I run it under my sink on spray and scrape it so that the silk that didn't come off easily will sort of come off, but then I'm still standing there picking silk off. And I know you have said that you don't mind some silk on corn.
Unless I grill it.
Yeah, right. I don't want to eat anything that's got like dental floss in it. Okay. You know, that's how I
understand.
Feel about corn silk.
We all have our limits.
I know. We're all picky about something. Anyway, I was reminded about that because I was reading something the other day about fresh corn, and the scuttlebutt was that it's really easy and delicious to microwave it just the way you buy it.
Okay.
And then shuck it.
Did they give you a time?
Yeah, and they're talking about 30, 40 seconds. So the thing is that it depends on your microwave, right?
Yeah,
they come in different strengths. And so maybe his was like a 600 watt, and if you have a 1,000 watt or an 800 watt one, it's not going to take nearly as long. But I think generally rule of thumb with the microwave cooking something new is 30 seconds at a time.
Okay.
And check it until you figure out what yours likes.
I just don't know how it could get hot in 30 seconds with that whole husk in there and the whole ear of corn. So Dale and I were talking the other day because we would go to like family reunions, and there's somebody at the family reunion who's like, we should start the corn, and they boil the corn for like 45 minutes, you know?
I know.
And you know why I think they do that? I think it's because it's a big gathering, and then they put the corn in coolers, you know, to keep it hot. But I think that they do that to get not just the corn hot, but to get the whole cob hot so that the corn will stay hot. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but geez.
I know. And it's a very grandma thing to do. I remember my grandma just, same thing, boiling the bejesus out of corn. But I think that might be part of the reason why. And so I'd cook some corn. I don't even remember. I think I boiled it for just a short amount of time. I did, because I had some pasta water going. So I didn't wrap it in plastic and put it in the microwave. But it got cold pretty fast. And that's what started us thinking about it, that maybe that's why they do it, to get the whole cob blazing hot, you know?
Yeah.
To keep the corn hot.
It makes sense.
For a picnic.
But you do sacrifice flavor.
Yeah, you do boil some of that away in 45 minutes.
Yeah, like you might be better off just throwing the corn away and drinking the water. possibly. I don't know.
Well, but, you know, people would want to eat, and they're like, the corn isn't done. And I'm like, oh, it's only been 40 minutes, you know.
Oh, my God.
It was always kind of ridiculous.
Oh, well, you know, times change, and styles of what we like change, because when you think about what you ate with your grandmother and what we eat now, it's completely the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, odd, not funny, haha.
Yeah. Yeah. My grandma did boil the bejesus out of a lot of things.
Yep.
But she used a lot of fresh strawberries, fresh fruit too. So, and she grew them so she could have them. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I grew up with cooking with my grandmother, and I didn't really realize that cooked green beans weren't gray.
Oh, I know. That's like the perfect example.
And were they delicious? Oh, yes, they were.
But pressure cookers.
Oh, my gosh. pressure cookers.
Just beaten into an atmospheric pressure of its life.
Yeah. It's science.
Yeah.
Linda Perkins, we're out of time.
Oh.
Well, gosh. I don't know. Do you want to sing us out?
Sure. I'm driving my plums around. I'm driving. We're plummeting. I am driving my plums around.
Very creative.
Driving my plums around. Driving my plums around for you. I wrote that.
That's so impressive. Try a plum or a pluot, everybody. Just try it. It's safe to go back in the plum world again.
It's that time of year.
Yeah, it is. They're delicious. See you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you, Linda.